welcome to the New Beginnings Message of the Week. We hope you enjoy this message from our Sunday service. For more information about our church, please visit us online at newbeginningscos.com. So I have a couple quick stories to kick things off with. So at an event famous for giving out awards in bizarre categories, the MC enthusiastically announces, "The next prize will go to the laziest person in the audience. If you think you qualify, raise your hand." Everyone raises their hands except a middle-aged man who seems to show little interest. "Congratulations, you are the winner," says the MC to the man. "Your prize is this $100 bill." Still showing no emotion, the man replies, "Would you mind coming over here and putting it in my pocket?" Here's another one. "Thinking no one could hear me as I loaded a UPS tractor trailer, I began to whistle. I was really getting into it when a coworker in the next trailer poked his head in. 'You know, I always used to wish I could whistle,' he said. 'Now I just wish you could.'" "As my two sons were climbing into the backseat of our car, Eric, 5, yelled, 'I call the left side.' That didn't sit well with Ron, who was 4. 'No, I want the left side. I want the left side. No, I want the left side.' Intervening, I said, 'Since Eric is older, he can have the left side.' 'Thanks, Dad,' said Eric. 'Which side is left?'" And lastly, someone said, "I'm a nurse in a hospital's children's ward. One night I was at the nurse's station when I heard a little boy in his room talking. He kept the patter up for some time. Finally, I got on the intercom and said softly but firmly, 'All right, Johnny, it's time to go to sleep now.' There was quiet in the room, and then he said, 'Okay, God, I will.' I didn't hear a peep from him until morning." Proverbs 17:22 says, "A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones." So when I do little jokes and things like that, I think it's a great way to just kind of warm us up and just chill us out a little bit. I think sometimes we can get a little tense and uptight throughout the week. But especially as we're talking about the idea of joy. Joy, I think, is one of the most powerful gifts that God has given us. And when we talk about that verse, "A merry heart does good like medicine," joy actually ministers to our souls. It actually brings healing. And I think a lot of times we go through our life and we know what happiness is, right? We know what it is to feel good in a particular moment. But I think sometimes we miss sight of what joy actually is, and that it's so much deeper than just feeling happy. It's more of a posture than an emotion. So we think of the fruit of the Spirit, and the fruit of the Spirit, think of something like patience. Patience is not something I feel. I can feel impatient. I can feel peace. But patience is actually literally just being able to wait without growing impatient, right? It's actually less of an emotion than it is a position of waiting without frustration, right? Waiting without frustration. Same with kindness. Kindness isn't necessarily a feeling that you have. Kindness is a behavior. It's a posture. I can behave with kindness to the people around me. I can have a posture of kindness. So when someone approaches me, instead of having a "get away from me, I don't want to talk to you," I can have a posture of kindness that I'm ready to receive whoever God brings through the door, whoever God brings in front of me with kindness. And I think it's the same with joyfulness. Joyfulness isn't just a feeling. It's not the feeling of being happy. It's actually a posture of being ready to be happy. Think about that. Being prepared to be happy. You know, when you wake up in the morning, I think that's a question we have to ask ourselves. Do you wake up? Are you ready to be happy when you wake up? You ever meet people that are just total morning persons, and that's just their personality? They wake up and they're like, I mean, we used to live in my parents' home, and they were on the upper level and we were on the lower level. And my mom just wakes up and she's ready to go. She's happy. We can hear the cabinet doors slamming. There's no morning mode for her. She is like in the zone. And I think some people wake up and they're just like that. They're ready. They have an expectancy for the day. And I'm not that way. I got to work myself into it. Like, I need a couple cups of coffee. I need quiet voices before 10 a.m. Like, I need that kind of thing to kind of ease my way into it. But I think there's something to say about getting our hearts to a place where we are ready, not just ready, prepared for joy, prepared for happiness, but seeking after it, looking for it. you know, I've talked a lot about different the different kind of personalities where we say, you know, somebody's an optimist or somebody's a pessimist. And I don't believe in such a thing as a kingdom pessimist. I don't think that works with the nature and the heart of God. I think there's something in him that is inherently joyful, that when we connect with his heart, it's going to come inside of us. Hope isn't really compatible with pessimism, right? Faith is not really compatible with pessimism. Pessimism says the worst thing that could happen is probably going to happen. But hope says the best thing that could happen is probably going to happen. So...
And that particular subject, an optimist feels there could be no better world. A pessimist fears he's right.
That's perfect. I love that. That's absolutely right. You know, one of the things that I've noticed is, you know, I talked about mornings. I talked to you guys a little bit ago that I have a CPAP machine now that helps me breathe while I'm sleeping because my oxygen was at 70. I was doing real bad. And so one of the things that was always a struggle for me was early mornings. I'd wake up feeling awful. So the last thing I wanted to see was the sun. But since I've had that machine, since I've been sleeping better, I wake up in the morning, and you know what I've been finding unexpected joy in is sunrises. I used to think, who would be ridiculous enough to get up early enough to see the sunrise? Like, yeah, it's pretty, but I'll look at it in a picture around noon. Like, I don't need to. But I've been enjoying that. I've been waking up at 5, and I feel good, and I have my little coffee, and I can just watch the sun come up. And our back window faces east, so I get to just watch the sky just slowly go pink and see everything come up. And it is a joy. It's a joy to see that transition into the day. So I think seeking things out that bring us joy, that bring healing to our soul, is essential. Romans 15:13 says, "Now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, that you may abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit." I love how Paul always likes to lump everything together. He's like, first you're going to have joy and peace and like hope and all this stuff. And it's all really good. But it's interesting that he says, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace. And I think he's actually referencing Isaiah 55. And Isaiah 55 says this. It says, "For you shall go out with joy and be led with peace. The mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing before you, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands." You shall go out with joy and be led by peace. I think that's why Paul was referencing that joy and that peace. But when you talk about going out, it literally means the concept of like when you leave your home, like when you step out into your day, when you walk out into the world, you're going to be led by joy and by peace. And you know the picture that I get of that? Is a little kid just grabbing your hand and just pulling you and going, come on, let's go. Like, sometimes we go to the store or whatever, my kids will just grab my hand, and their pace is very different than my pace. Again, my pace is slow. I like to just take it a little bit at a time. And they're like, come on, Dad. And I feel like, can you imagine if we allowed joy to lead us out, if we allowed joy to take us by the hand and go, this is going to be different than you expect it to be. This is going to be better than you could think. And how does that change everything? And then it gives this picture of the mountains and the hills shall break forth into singing, and the trees of the field shall clap their hands. I think it's intentionally an absurd, childish description. Like, you think of mountains singing and the trees clapping their hands, and it's like you can't help but smile a little bit because it's just like that's so out there, that's so strange. And yet I think that it's intentionally designed to make us smile, to build up that sense of childlike wonder and joy. Nehemiah 8:10 says, "The joy of the Lord is our strength." And if there's a foundational verse that I want to hinge on today, it's that one. Because I think we think of that, and we think of often the joy that God gives us is our strength. But that's not what it says. It says the joy of the Lord. It's actually his joy. It's the joy that he feels. It's the joy that he experiences. His exuberant joyfulness is what gives us strength. And it changes everything when you know and you understand that our God is not an angry, pouting, seething, raging God, but he's a God that's filled with joy. He was happy when he made us. It was for the joy set before him that Jesus died for us. And so the way that God feels about us, there's no hesitation in him in coming after our hearts. He is joyful. He's excited. He's happy. And he imparts that into us when we allow him to. God's not going to make you feel joy. He's not going to make you be happy. How many of you guys know it? You can choose how you're going to respond to things. Have you ever been mad and someone tells a joke or tries to say something funny? They try to make you laugh and it just makes you madder. And you're just like, bad timing. That was off. And then sometimes you're in that position and you're the one trying to say the funny thing and help someone else feel better. It's all about our posture, right? Because the posture can be like, I'm not going to let joy invade. I had to have a conversation with one of my kids just yesterday about this. They had a conflict and one of them was so mad at the other one about something small, but they made a decision in that moment that they were just going to stay in this place. And I was like, you know, if you had just said this, and I gave kind of a offhanded funny comment, I said it would have resolved the same situation that you were concerned with, and wouldn't have felt better? Wouldn't that have been more fun? I said, wouldn't that have been more fun? And my kid goes, I don't know. Would that have been more fun than what we are doing right now, this serious conversation? I don't know. Well, it would have been more fun for me. But here's the thing. It's his joy. We're strengthened by God's delight in us. By connecting with his heart, we have to know what he's like. We have to know his character. We have to understand that he's approachable for the very fact that he wants to be with us, that he's joyful. He's not looking at you going, oh man, you just screwed up today. I don't know if I want to talk to you today. We'll see. Let's see how the rest of the day goes, and then we'll talk later. He's ready to engage with us right away. I had a moment in prayer. This was many, many years ago, a couple decades actually. But I was praying, and as I was praying, I felt like I was becoming demanding. And I wasn't demanding anything bad. I was like, Lord, move in my heart. Lord, come and teach me to be like you. And I was like, I was praying good stuff, right? But then I was like, oh man, I'm getting a little demanding. So I said, please. And I actually heard the Lord laugh. I felt him laugh at me. Like, he's in just this joyful, exciting, like, he's like, it's so nice that you care about being polite, but he's like, I'm not concerned with that. I just felt he was joyful at that. And to have God laugh, to hear the laugh of God, to feel the joy of God, there is nothing like that in our lives. In Psalm 16:11, David says, you will show me the path of life. In your presence is the fullness of joy. In the presence of God, right? In the presence of God is not the fullness of fear. In the presence of God is not the fullness of condemnation. In the presence of God is the fullness of joy. And he says, at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. See, that's why David came after God more deeply than probably anybody in his time period, because he understood the depth of how much God was for him. He understood the depth of the fact that God was a joyful God. I think so many people in that time and age looked at God and they looked at what he had said and what he had taught, and they interpreted everything that God had taught them and told them in the law through the context of God being angry. And David's like, you don't get it. This stuff is a blessing, because if we do this, we get to be close to him. And if we get to be close to him, that's not the place of judgment anymore. That's the place of joy. That's the place of freedom. David understood that everything was a building block toward connection with the Lord. And as it became a building block toward connection with the Lord, that was the place of freedom and joy. So all of this stuff was worth it just to get close to him. It was for the joy set before David that he pursued the presence of God through the law. So interesting that he had that context and that understanding. Last week, after teaching you guys, I don't know if you remember, but I talked about my favorite restaurant, which is Taco Express. Guess what I did after church last week? I went and got some Taco Express. It brought me great joy. My daughter came with me. She was the one who suggested it. She's like, you should get Taco Express. And I'm like, I should. And we split it. We just shared it. And so she had half and I had half. And man, I was happy. Have you ever had something that you knew that you wanted, but then you settled for something else instead? You know, this morning I knew I wanted Chick-fil-A. I don't eat out all the time, guys. This is sounding really bad. It's sounding really bad, isn't it? My wife's going to watch this and go, how much did you spend on eating out? No. But I wanted Chick-fil-A this morning, but I had to settle for something else. I think a lot of times our hearts, our souls are actually craving joy. I think our souls are craving joy. They're craving an experience that brings us out of ourselves, that brings us into a flow of just excitement and anticipation. And instead, we settle for something else. We settle for something less than joy. We settle for just okay. And it's prevalent across our culture, but I think we have adopted a mentality of, if I'm okay, I'm doing really good. Like, we get so excited about being okay. How are you doing? Fine. Excellent. Good. You know what I mean? It's not like we hear a whole lot of, how are you doing? I am so good right now. This is like, you know, we might hear that once in a blue moon, and then we're like, all right, you're a little weird. That's not normal. We settle for just okay. And yet David says, in your presence is the fullness of joy. It could not be any more full. It's maxed out. It's reached capacity. There is no extra joy. It's all there. And at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. Unending, infinite pleasures. I think it's to our credit to pursue the joy of the Lord. To pursue the joy that he carries and to ask him to impart that into us. And to say, listen, I think sometimes we think of seeking after things that are pleasurable as bad. Sometimes we're like, man, I enjoy that too much, so I got to cut that out. And we think that pursuing things that make us feel good are bad. And now listen, that can be bad. There are definitely things that could make us feel good that we should not be pursuing. But when the Lord says, I have pleasures forevermore, he's not laying that out before us to go, now don't partake. I don't want you to enjoy yourself too much. The Lord's actually not afraid of that. There's John Piper coined this phrase of a Christian hedonist. A Christian hedonist, someone who seeks after pleasure, because that's what we were made for. We were made to enjoy the Lord and to be enjoyed by him, which actually means the pursuit of pleasure is not in and of itself bad. It's just unfulfilling unless it comes from him. But if it comes from him, why wouldn't we go after it? Why wouldn't we want the fullness of it? When my wife and I did our travels around the world, one of the countries we went to was Ukraine. And so we were in Ukraine in Crimea, which I guess was taken back by Russia, and I don't even know what the status of it is right now. But one of the churches we went to, and this isn't to speak negatively about them, but it was just the sense that I had. We went to this church service, and it was so stoic. And part of that is cultural, but I think part of that was this particular church, and it was, we sang these songs, and I couldn't sing them because it was all in Ukrainian, but it felt the sense that I had, the feeling that we all had, was like being at a funeral. And the songs were just very, like minor key, like going downward, like it was, nothing was rising, it was all going down, and it was like, it just had this sense of just, there's nothing happy in this room. Nobody's excited to be here. People are here because they should be here, but it didn't feel at all like anybody was like. And so we walked away from that going like, I gotta refresh. I gotta find something, because I actually feel like that was such a downer. Contrast that with the churches we went to in Africa. Oh man, a Kenyan church service would go for 4 or 5 hours. And it was incredible. It was incredible. Worship was like 1.5 to 2 hours. People are dancing. It was the same in Australia. In Australia, these Aboriginal tribal people, and this lady would come out literally in the middle of the street. She'd bring a keyboard, not like one of these, but like one of those little kid keyboards, and you know, like from Walmart. And she would like tap the demo button. And they'd sing a song to the demo button, and they're jumping up and down in the middle of the street in Australia, and there's so much joy. I mean, in Africa, you hear the message, And then they get back up for worship, and I'm like, okay, they're going to do an after-worship song. It was not an after-worship song or after-teaching song. It was an after-teaching worship service. It just went. And so we're like 2 or 3 p.m. I'm like, I'm so hungry, but we're going. But joy gives you the energy to keep on going. Joy gives you the freedom and the excitement, the anticipation to say, I don't mind being here for 5 hours because this is his presence, and in his presence is joy. This is great. If I had to sit in the Ukrainian church for 5 hours, I don't know what mental state I would be in at the end of that time period. It would not be good. We need joy. And I think sometimes we block ourselves from joy. I think sometimes we make a decision that we're too busy to seek joy or too busy to experience joy. I think sometimes we make a decision that we don't deserve it. I think sometimes we say, you know what, I don't really deserve joy. This person needs me. This situation needs me. This work thing needs me. I have all these responsibilities. I'm not really valuable enough to take the time to actually explore my own needs for joy. And I think sometimes we do that and push it off to the side. You know, like I told you guys about my sleep machine, the CPAP machine. Before I had that, I would wake up in the morning, and if that sun was shining in my eyes, I was like Gandalf speaking to the Balrog in Lord of the Rings. I was like, back to the shadow! Like, just, I was not okay. But I had an underlying issue, right? I had an underlying issue that was causing me to not be able to engage with mornings and sunrises with joy. My underlying issue at the time was I wasn't breathing well. I stopped breathing 500 times an hour or something wild like that. So, obviously, I had a good reason. But I had to pursue life to get to a point where I could really experience true joy again. Sometimes, and here's the thing, this is one of the paradoxes of faith, right? There's paradoxes of faith where sometimes it works one way and sometimes it works the other way. Sometimes the Lord does a miracle, does something incredible, and we give him gratitude and we thank him for it. Sometimes we give him gratitude and we thank him for it before it happens, and then the miracle comes. And in the same way, sometimes we have to kind of get some healing in our heart and get to a place where we can actually walk in joy and receive joy and be able to experience it fully. I had to get a CPAP machine for me to be able to look at mornings in a different light. But there's other situations in my life. You know, I'll say, you know, years ago we were struggling a lot financially. And in that season, I was waking up with anxiety. And the Lord was trying to teach me something. And I was staying, like, just laying in bed, just going, I don't know what we're going to do. We have nothing left. And in those moments, I remember the Lord trying to teach me, this is when you thank me. This is when you worship. This is when you praise. This is when you experience joy. And I will tell you, I started doing it, and the Lord didn't change my situation right away, but when he did, it flipped everything upside down. But nothing changed until I engaged in the place of joy and in a place of thanksgiving, in a place of gratitude that said, the Lord, there are people who have way less than I, and even with as little as I have, we've never missed an essential payment. Even if we've only barely made it. Even if I have to check my bank balance before I get gas in my car, even if I have to measure every cent that we're spending on groceries, we've never missed it. You know, to be able to just flip my perspective, my posture, to a posture of joyfulness, anxiety disappeared. My relationship with my wife shifted. My relationship with finances and money shifted. Instead of holding on to everything, I was able to say, this is yours, God, I'm releasing this. We actually started giving. We had no money. We started giving $1 a month and then $5 a month. That's all we could give. But we were like, God, out of our nothing, if we can't give out of that, we won't give out of the plenty. So that posture changed me. It changed us. I think the underlying issue becomes our focus. We have to focus on him. You know, when you go to the doctor and they go, where does it hurt? It's so easy to like, well, it hurts back here. I was cleaning my garage yesterday. And, you know, I mean, it's true. But we can focus on that. Or we can let ourselves experience something greater than my immediate circumstances. If I only live out of the reality of my current immediate circumstances, I'm actually not entering in to the joy that's in the presence of the Lord. Because the presence of the Lord is above and outside and so far beyond just what's in my immediate circumstances. The joy and the pleasures of the Lord go infinitely into history and infinitely into the future. And when you're able to engage with him in his place, in his presence, the now becomes less real. It's not that the now isn't important. It's not that it's not real. It just becomes less real. It's less important than being able to engage with him, and because that is what begins to change our circumstances. We have to know he's a good God. Psalms 51 says, 51:12, restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me by your generous spirit. I think sometimes we need that joy of our salvation restored to us. Most of us will remember a time, a moment, where we encountered him, where we came to him, and we said, God, I want you. And we met Jesus, and things were changed, and we experienced that joy. And that's a joy that can be restored and refreshed to us. It's not a joy that's lost to time. But I love the next piece of what David says. David says, restore to me the joy of your salvation and uphold me by your generous spirit. The Lord is generous. He's gracious. He's giving. David actually says, I will be upheld. I will be kept safe. I am on a solid foundation because of your generous spirit. And when he says his generous spirit, he's actually saying, Lord, your nature is generosity. Your character is generous. I think what we have to watch for in our lives is just our natural tendencies, our habits, because I think when we create a pattern, we stick to it a lot of times. It's kind of like a rotary phone. Only half the room's going to maybe know what that is. Rotary phone where you dial and then it goes back, right? It doesn't matter what number you put it to, it's always going to go back. And I think sometimes we live that way where we're so used to, you know, waking up and not liking the sunset because I lived for so long not being able to breathe. I have a negative association with that, or the sunrise. I have a negative association with that. Right? And so sometimes we live in our lives and we're like, I don't know how to experience joy in this place because this place reminds me of pain. This place reminds me of struggle. This is a place of difficulty. I don't know how to have joy here because whenever I try to set the dial to joy, it just goes back. And I think the Lord is saying in his generous spirit, he wants to lead us into a better place. He wants to lead us into a place where it doesn't keep going back, but where there's a new normal, there's a new setting, and what we do go back to now becomes joy. What we go back to, it defaults, because that is our strength. It's the place of healing, and it's the place of strength. One of my favorite quotes, it's a Shakespeare quote, and in Much Ado About Nothing, this father is describing his daughter to a friend, and he's talking about his daughter, and he says, there's little of the melancholy element in her, my lord. She's never sad but when she sleeps. And not even sad then, for I've heard my daughter say, she's often dreamt of unhappiness and waked herself with laughing. Wow. Think about that. I actually think that's a very biblical quote. Because there are times that we enter into that place and we're like, it's just dark, and we feel misery coming upon us, and we feel doubt and depression and darkness coming upon us, and we have a chance in that moment to decide, am I going to let myself be enveloped by this, or am I going to reject it and step into something new? And in this quote, what she did, she would dream of sadness, and she'd wake up laughing. You know what? I think the devil, the enemy, wants to get us into that place where we're enveloped by darkness. And I actually think laughing is a wonderful medicine to reject the lies of the enemy. When the enemy comes at you with a lie, you're not good enough, you're not loved, you can't get anything together, nobody will ever support you. When the enemy comes at you with those lies, we can actually allow joy to bubble up in us and go, that is absurd. You are ridiculous. You don't have a clue how many people love me. You don't have a clue how supported I am. You don't have a clue what's inside of me. And we let joy and laughter, and we reject that darkness. Because listen, The enemy will take every opportunity to get us to align with his perspective, with his posture. And that's a posture of rejecting all life and accepting all death. Joy is a great wedge to wedge the door back open when it feels like it's been shut on us, when it feels like we're trapped in darkness. The Lord has given us the gift of joy as a ministry of healing and as a ministry to wedge that door back open. It's interesting because, yes, of course, there's joy on the other side, right? But if we can experience and go after his joy in the middle of the struggle, in the middle of the turmoil, that is often in and of itself the breakthrough. Sometimes we think, man, I'll be joyful when my circumstances change. But did you know that joy is the breakthrough? When I was struggling with our financial stuff, when I was in that place and I was able to break through into joy, at that point I was like, of course I want our circumstances to change, but I don't need them to anymore. If I have to live like this forever, I know you will never let me down. You will always give us what we need. You will always support us. There's no fear. And that joy was the breakthrough that I needed. I thought money was the breakthrough I needed. It wasn't. Joy actually undermines the work of the enemy. Whatever happens after that is dessert, right? Whatever happens after the breakthrough of joy, that's bonus. But connecting with him, knowing he's happy, knowing he's got us, knowing he's made the flowers of the field and the birds of the air, he's not going to let me perish. Solomon and David both saw this problem, and they saw it in two different places, in two different ways. I think Solomon, you know, learned from his dad, and Solomon did a great job describing the problem, but I think David did a great job describing the solution. Solomon said in Proverbs 13:12, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when the desire comes, it's a tree of life." When the desire comes, it's a tree of life. Anytime we have a deep longing and need and desire for something, and it doesn't happen, it makes our heart sick. But when that desire comes, it's a tree of life. But David actually described the solution a lot better. David said in Psalms 37:4, "Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart." David was basically saying, like, if David had come after Solomon, it's as if David is saying, like, yeah, we need to have the desires of our hearts fulfilled. But if we delight ourselves in him, all of our desires will be fulfilled. When we put our delight into the Lord, it means my desires shift. What I need shifts. What I'm looking for shifts. Seek first the kingdom of heaven and everything else is added. All of a sudden, my delight's in God. I don't need anything else but you. I don't need anything but your presence. We still have integrity. We still have responsibility. We still have wisdom. But we don't operate out of a need for the results. We operate out of obedience and love for him. And that's what drives us. So I think we have to refamiliarize ourselves with joy. And sometimes it's just starting with the little things. Sometimes it's just the little moments, the little unexpected things, and being able to actually rejoice in them. I saw a movie with Catherine several years ago, and she's got a history of this, but this was one of my favorite times. We were watching this movie, and in the movie, the character's in this really cold, frozen place. And one of the side characters, one of the background characters, is looking at his foot, and he's got no shoe or sock on, and he's looking at his toes, and he grabs his big toe, and his big toe breaks off. Now, I'm sitting there in the theater going, like, I wish I'd known that was coming. I would have looked away. And the second that happens, Catherine busts out laughing. She's the only one in the theater. And it's not a quiet laugh. It was a loud, like, fill the room kind of laugh. But I'll tell you, that moment stuck with me because she found joy so easily. That's just her nature. That's her character. And I look at that moment, as funny as it sounds, as a great example of finding joy and laughter in something that makes me uncomfortable. I hate that stuff. Like, my daughter loves watching this show called Dr. Oakley, and it's this veterinarian, and it's all these... I texted my wife the other day, and I said, does Dr. Oakley ever do anything that's not horribly offensive and gross? And she's like, no. God, yeah. I don't want to hear the word abscess ever again. But having my wife laugh in that theater, that moment of joy, that's something I actually go back to when I need kind of a little refresher of what it is to laugh in the moment, to experience his joy in an unexpected place. Even look at the disciples, you know, they're in prison, they're hanging on the walls, and they're singing. Just singing. They didn't sing because they thought the jail cells were going to bust open. They just sang because they loved God, because they found joy in one of the most difficult circumstances. Yeah, no, like hanging. Sometimes the joy and the gratitude precede the gift and the blessing. Sometimes it's delight before desires. Another psalm, David says, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfies your mouth with good things, so that your youth is renewed like the eagles." That's a God that I can easily pursue and go after. And so I just want to encourage us all to allow the joy of the Holy Spirit to begin to flow in a greater way. I actually want to invite Brandon up to just kind of just play instrumentally for just a second here. And let's just take a moment and just ask the Holy Spirit to minister his joy into our lives. How many of you know when you walk into a room, you bring something with you? You bring something with you. Sometimes someone walks into a room and you're like, oh, you brought something with you. And I think sometimes we let ourselves be so easily impacted by other people. Sometimes people walk in the room with a cloud and you're like, oh man, now I'm feeling grumpy because you're grumpy. And it's like, what if instead of that, we said we carry Holy Spirit with us. We carry the presence of Jesus. Guess what? I get to bring joy into the room. I don't care what else is in the room. I get to bring joy into it. And when I bring joy into it, all of a sudden the cloud that was on you begins to dissipate because my cloud is bigger than yours. Holy Spirit that is in me is bigger than anything that's in this room. And he can fill this place. You know what? Holy Spirit that is in you is bigger than anything that's in this city. You know, we've got a lot of depressed people in this city. And what would happen if we said we are a joy-filled people who serve a joy-filled God, and we're actually going to begin to shift the atmosphere in our city, because wherever we go, we're bringing joy with us.